G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. How are you today?
I'm going very, very well. Very well. What's going on in your world?
Well, I'm a little bit disappointed this morning because I saw yesterday about a vanilla sliced donut that emerged on social media.
Well, you're meant
you may have seen, you may have seen photographic evidence of such a thing—a vanilla sliced donut. So that's combining my two favourite things into one. So
I don't know how it works. I must admit, I did see this yesterday.
I don't know how it works. We're trying to get the bakery on, and we've spent a fair bit of time investigating this in the background in the last 24 hours. Well, yes, and we can't get them on yet. Now, we don't want to say too much, but we're still investigating it vigorously behind the scenes to try and determine exactly how these are made and where we can purchase them from, because we would like to do that very much.
Would we? Or would we just like to eat them?
Well, that too. what else would it mean? Want to know how they're made? Want to know how we can get lots of them, all that sort of stuff. So I was hoping that we might be able to speak to them. Even though we're a sports show.
It's a fluffy conveyance, the donut. It needs to be fluffed.
What do you mean?
It's the donut itself needs to be a fluffy thing, doesn't it? It's got to be a nice fluffy thing. It doesn't want to be a custardy sort of thing. It's either a custard block vanilla slice, or it's a donut, or it's a fluffy donut. Can you put those together? Does that make sense?
Well, that's why we want to speak to the baker that actually makes this.
Not our baker, our man on this mess.
This is a regional bakery, and we would like to speak to these people about how it's made and how we can get them. Because we've got a bit of an issue, because we're based in Melbourne, and there is a ring of steel, which is meaning that we can't get to regional Victoria. But I'm sure that vanilla sliced donuts would be able to go from regional Victoria to Melbourne.
Can a donut beat a ring of steel?
Well, a vanilla slice donut can beat anything.
A vanilla slice donut. It's a most unusual combination as far as I'm concerned. It sounds delicious. If it could work, don't get me wrong, it sounds delicious. Vanilla slice is one of my favourites. Donuts I'm okay with, but I'm more vanilla slice man. Put it together, and it does sound appetising. I'm just not sure how it happens. Just not sure what it looks like and feels like and tastes like. In fact, if our baker friend is listening, I wouldn't mind getting some feedback from him about what his initial thoughts are on the concept of the vanilla sliced donut. So send it through, 0416 90 50 52.
Yep. So there's that I want to just get out early. The other thing, which is very, very interesting, and I hope he's okay, is Adam Scott. Yes. Has tested positive to coronavirus.
Well, it's been a bad 24 hours for superstars of the sort of era just gone in Australian sport and coronavirus, because Harry Kuehl's got it too.
Yeah, so you're right. That would be sort of two in the top 20 of Australian sports people for the last 25 years.
Yeah.
I would say. But the interesting thing with Adam Scott getting coronavirus was that he spent a long time in Queensland while the first wave hit to stay right away. He was playing golf on Facebook he was just spending a lot of time at home with his family and all those sorts of things. But he's gone back to America, obviously, and he's now got coronavirus. So, I think that was a bit of a shock when we saw that this morning.
He's had to pull out of the PGA tournament this week. He was going to play this week and hopefully go well, but he's had to pull out, so not to be for Adam Scott. So we'll find out how he is. We'll try and track him down. What's Benny Everill up to? He'd know some stuff.
Yeah, we should try and get Ben Everill on.
Should try and get Benny on.
See what Joe can do about that. Exactly what is actually going on at the moment. because I think that's, you know, that's he. I mean, he is one of the biggest names in Australian sport, and yeah, not good, not good.
No, he and Harry.
There's no suggestion that it's serious or anything like that, but he has got it, so that's not really ideal.
No, no, it was a long way from being an outrageous claim. It's fact, so we're just dealing with fact at the moment. And we'll see where that goes. And we'll try and get a hold of Benny Everill, see what Joey can do about that, and just check him down and see what he knows about the depth of that situation with Adam Scott on the PGA Tour. But you're right, he did try to get away from it, and now he's got it. So I wonder what that means for Adam's year in golf. Will he try and get back once he's got through the virus, hopefully, and see what happens. Interesting. There's been a bit of movement. Did you see the Matthew Boyd, our man, who we've created a superstar in the world of coaching? We had him on the Breakfast Club as one of our Inner Sanctum guests a couple of years ago. Put him up on a pedestal for all to see and listen to and understand how smart he was in the world of footy. He's gone over to Frio to hang out with Justin Longmuir. Did you see that yesterday?
Yes. So they're good mates.
Yes.
So they had a thing going when they were both at Collingwood as assistant coaches. So I don't think that's seen as a surprise, because that's what happens when a coach, when an assistant coach becomes a senior coach somewhere, it might take a couple of years, but they start to get their people to surround him. So that's happened. And, you know, I know that Matthew Boyd was very highly thought of at Collingwood. Matthew Boyd was very highly thought of at the Western Bulldogs when he was playing, almost as a pseudo assistant coach. So, yes, Justin Longmuir assembling his own panel now, because there's been a lot of changes to the assistant coaches at Fremantle. I mean, there's a lot of changes at assistant coach level every year. But, yeah, it's just taken that little bit longer for things to start to evolve for what Justin wants in his group.
We didn't actually talk about Don Pike getting back into the game last week.
Yeah.
Because he's gone back up, or not back up, he's gone up to Sydney as an assistant to Johnny Longmire. And sort of,
I think that's a really interesting one.
Yeah, it was a name that just came out of the blue. We hadn't heard from Don Pike or heard about Don Pike for a long time, and all of a sudden he's back in the coaching game with the Swans and moving to Sydney to do it.
I think the interesting one with Don Pike is a couple of things. One is that he is a very successful businessman, and the feeling was when he got out of coaching that he would never go back into that sort of high-pressure environment of a football club, regardless of whether he was a senior coach or an assistant coach or something else. He had done some games on radio this year over in Perth or around the place doing bits and pieces. But I think the thing that's interested me on that one is that I would have thought he would be a really good head of football if he wanted to be that, a director of coaching, head of a football department, particularly with his business background, that he's actually just gone back to essentially replace John Blakey as an assistant coach is an interesting move. Because he just goes back to being part of that coaching group as opposed to perhaps more of a holistic view on a football department. Because I think there are a few clubs that are out there at the moment looking at ways of supporting a senior coach and a young senior coach. And we've obviously talked a fair bit about in the last week or so about the challenges that Rhys Shaw has at the moment. And there are quite a few other sort of young, inexperienced senior coaches around at the moment, is how do they give them the best chance of succeeding? And maybe it's that seniority around them to sort of help guide them through. Don Pike, I would have thought, would be good in that situation, particularly with his business background in managing staff and managing a business.
What's Ross Lyon going to end up doing? What do you reckon Ross Go's going to do? Because, in fact, he was talking last night, interesting conversation that about the coaching and the impact of it on your life. He was talking last night about that, about saying that coaching, it's like if you're not ready for the chair, it's going to eat you up. And you're a special breed. Effectively, what he was saying was you're a special breed to be able to deal with coaching and to deal with the pressures that come with it, the rigors that come with it. It was a fascinating conversation. We might try and get the audio from Ross with Joey at the back. We'll see what we can do about that. Because if you've got vulnerabilities, it was on the lines of, if you've got vulnerabilities, coaching will extrapolate them to the nth degree and will eat you up if you're not ready for it. It's an unusual seat. And you're a special breed to be able to take it and understand the magnitude of the impact it's going to have on your life, let alone the pressures that come with it. It was a really interesting insight into coaching. We heard Alistair Clarkson talking the other night on 360 about the challenges and the pressures and how we can alleviate some of those. And we had that conversation with Rocket on Tuesday. What's today? Thursday. Yeah, a couple of days ago. Tuesday. But to hear Ross say it, like it's pretty, as Ross is, pretty matter of fact, it's a tough chair. And if you're not quite ready for it, you're going to get found out real quick. That was an interesting insight from Ross. Because he's clearly one of the ones out there at the moment who's not in the chair, who seems to be having a good time outside of it, just by the way. But that experience and that ability to cope with the demands of what AFL senior coaching is, sitting on the sidelines, does look to be a hell of a waste.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. But he's such a big personality. He's so strong and in his beliefs about how, you know, it's a risk to bring him in where he will then completely control everything. And I think, you know, that's the whole thing about, do we let him loose sort of thing with the way he goes about it. But, I mean, when you look around the 18 clubs at the moment, there are not too many clubs that have senior coaches. It's just the cycle. And even if, look, I don't like to talk about North Melbourne that Reece Shaw definitely isn't going to be coached because no one knows, but there's this feeling that, oh, well, there's going to be a coaching job up for grabs.
The sentiment is he won't come back. That's the sentiment at the moment.
Yes, but if you look at, well, then who is available, it goes through waves. So you go through, you've got to get someone with experience. So you go the senior sort of coach. Well, there's not many of them around anymore. There just isn't.
Yeah.
You go for the recycled coach, and I don't like to say it in those terms, but that's kind of what it is. And because Brett Ratten got the job at St Kilda and he's been seen as being better second time round, then all of a sudden now the language is, well, we've got to give Matthew Knights another opportunity because he's learnt from his time at Essendon, he's going to be better second time round. Michael Voss, who was hammered at the time for not being nearly up to it at Brisbane, all of a sudden, well, it's obvious that he'll be getting another opportunity soon because of the success of Brett Ratten. Because before the success of Brett Ratten, there'd been a cycle where those guys were never going to get another chance. You'd just go to the youngest, best candidate.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Joey, that audio has just come through for you to that link if you want to have a look at it on your phone. We'll sort that out. That's fantastic work from you. You're right. Just the way he's talking, the quote is, if you've got weaknesses, coaching will compound them and grow that problem, and was part of the comment that he made last night, which I thought was interesting. Because it is a different chair. It's a different beast, coaching. Because you can build all the relationships you like. You can be all as tactically sound as you like. But until you can deal with all that and the pressures that come with it and all the requirements where you're pulled from all corners of the footy club for different reasons as the coach, depending on how it's all structured up, it's until you're in the chair, you got no idea what's actually coming to.
So you are a senior coach at AFLW level. Now, I know that's different to AFL level, but it's still a job of responsibility and there is pressure attached to that and there's demands attached to that. Do you think it's been harder for you than what you thought it would be?
Yep. Because it's the management. That's what gets you. Because you're a footy person. The footy stuff's the easy stuff. It's the management of the program, of the staff, of the players that not too many people, I don't think, from a football background, have that level of expertise in managing groups of people. You play and you think and you analyse and all that sort of stuff. But that's as I said before, that's the easy component to a degree. The management of putting that all together and making that function and getting that dynamic right, going back to Ross from the other week on Classified as well, the mechanics you can have, that's the easy stuff. The dynamics part and the management part is the biggest challenge. I think in coaching, full stop. And that goes to any sport, any level. Coaching is, like, even if it's the kids under 12 basketball team, the management of that program, of the, you know, the parents, the players, the calendar, all that stuff. That's the challenge of coaching, the real challenge of coaching. Because more often than not, you've got some level of tactical nous or relationship building capacity. But it's more than that. You've got to be more than that. You've got to be a bigger profile, a bigger personality, and be aware of many more things than you think more often than not when you get into a job like that, any coaching job. So let's have a listen to Ross on Classified last night. It's an interesting take on what it is to be a senior coach and what might happen to you if you're not quite right. It goes for a little while, but I think it's worth listening to.
Well, it's enormous pressure, but that So I can only talk from my personal experience. I found, and no one stuffed it up more than and the pressure come, particularly 07 at St Kilda. But personally, I just felt, work as hard as I could, give your greatest effort. If that wasn't good enough, well, you've got to take that emotional risk to fail. So my personal view is, I feel if you have some vulnerabilities, for want of a better term, going in, and that real pressure of losing comes, and particularly, and I've experienced two teams in one town, it is a fishbowl, or if you're a big club, there's a difference, with respect, coaching Collingwood and Essendon, to some smaller Melbourne clubs. So I don't think it's the profession per se. I think it's the seat, and you need a makeup to be able to survive that seat. That's what I think. I think if you've got weaknesses, it will help compound them and grow that problem, I think. But support, sorry, you go, look, support's never been better.
Are the people around you, how critical are they in terms of...
Really important. Your football manager, your football operations manager is critical. We can see Jeff Walsh, I think it is, going across to Collingwood. Has been fantastic. Balm coming in with all the experience and just guiding Hardwick, who was a great coach in the making, but it struggled in some areas. So, but you need a resilience. Not everyone is made out for it. And sometimes you get promoted beyond your capability and you find that pretty quickly in the chair. That's not in the Caroline brochure. There's a lot of glossy things in the brochure, but not the realities. And it's social media has made it ever more complex and stressful than it's ever been before.
It's an interesting take from Ross Lyon on Footy Classified last night on Channel 9.
Now, that's my point around if you are going to support a young coach with someone, okay, well, everyone says, oh, you've got to get the Neil Balm template because he was the one that came across and helped Damien Hardwick and he was the one that helped Mark Thompson. And he, well, but he's like a unicorn, Neil Balm, because there's not 18 of them to go and help. So Jeff Walsh is at Collingwood and he's been there a long time and he's been a, you know, been a very strong football person across multiple clubs. But when you look around the AFL, there's not too many of them.
No, there's not. That's why they're so valuable. That's why Adelaide would have been absolutely champing at the bit to try and get Neil Balm, and then he has a little heart or the health scare and he decides to just keep it on the low down and stay in Melbourne, where in Adelaide thought they had him to assist Matty Nix and guide him through the process after 12 months in the seat there at the Adelaide Crows. The emotional risk to fail, I love that.
Yeah, I did too.
You've got to be okay with failing and the all that comes with that on just about on every front of your life, every facet of your life. The emotional risk to fail, it is. AFL coaches, and you know, I'm an AFLW coach, nowhere near the pressure of an AFL coach. AFL men's coaches are absolutely different beasts. You have to be. We can talk about the evolution of the manager role as much as you like, but the pressures that come with it and the scrutiny that you are under, you're a different beast. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah. And I think you can kind of see in a way why Essendon went with that transitional period for John Worsfold to Ben Rutten to try and expose Ben to as much of that and to have John Worsfold guide him through as much as he could for that year. Now, again, it probably hasn't worked the way they thought it would for a number of reasons, but you can understand the rationale around why you would do such a thing. Because now John goes, Ben's on his own, but Ben's already under enormous pressure before he's even started. Yep. That's just the way this year's played out. Who is he going to go to lean on as a sort of a mentor or someone in, because in that at the moment in that football club there isn't that role. So and I think that was, you know, Matthew Nix, it didn't take long for Adelaide to work out, geez, well who's Matthew Nix got to lean on to help through? Yeah, he's got his assistant coaches, but who has he got that perhaps has gone through a period where they don't win for 8 or 9 weeks that he can lean on to, you know, just to keep the confidence levels up and the belief that he actually can do the job. Because it hit him really early in his career, as it did with Damien Hardwick. Damien Hardwick lost his first 9 or 10 games.
He did. He's bounced back okay, though. He's bounced back okay, Dimmer. Doing a good job. Why wouldn't Yeah, good SMS that I'll read through shortly. And what about this one off the SMS from the baker, who we love? I'll investigate said vanilla sliced donuts, but initial thoughts are, and this is my thoughts, I'm with the baker here, why ruin two great things by mashing them together? That's good feedback. And then this one is probably the best SMS we may have ever had. Adam, you need to organise 5 kilometre transfer points from your place to the source of the donuts. It can be like the Olympic torch relay. I'm sure your listeners can help out. Please post one up here if you can, says Andrew in Sydney. Andrew, that is bloody genius, that is. The Olympic torch relay for the vanilla sliced donut. That is a great visual. I'm amused by that.
That's very good.
I'm amused by that. Well done, Andrew. Well done indeed. Excellent stuff. Jappy said he'll deliver them personally from Bendigo. He's allowed outside the Ring of Steel, of course, or inside the Ring of Steel. He just can't get back. Once he's in, he's stuck.
Yeah, that's right.
Just be careful what you wish for, Jappy.
If he's prepared to bring some vanilla sliced donuts down, he can stay at our house for as long as he likes.
And we also love Scotty McLaughlin. He's our very own turtle. He will go forever the way he's going. He's a machine, this man. 3-time supercar champion. He went from Mount Panorama on the weekend, jumped on the bird, and is now in Florida. So Petersburg, Florida, getting ready for his IndyCar debut. And he joins us on the line. Scotty, welcome.
G'day, boys. That's an interesting conversation to walk into. That's probably one of the weirdest ones I've worked into with RSN there. But yeah, good.
Good. Yeah. That's good. We'd like to just keep you on your toes a bit. Did you ever have a turtle as a kid back in the what do they call those things? Fish bowls?
Childhood?
No, I never really had one, mate. But can't say I'm a turtle extraordinaire at all.
Righto. Well, there's something for you to do after this race this week. Now I know you've gone from Bathurst to St. Petersburg in Florida. Firstly, how do you come down from Bathurst? Does the flight give you the chance to just chill out and get over the whole experience of Bathurst?
I mean, I was still pretty. I was pretty disappointed with the whole weekend for me. I think, you know, fifth for me was a bit of a downer. I think, you know, it was a great result in the end, but you sort of go there wanting more, especially being the defending champ of the race. So probably on the plane I had a lot to think about and just was probably a little bit, tired and a bit disappointed with the result. But anyway, it is what it is. You take what you get, move forward. But I was certainly pretty. And once I sort of started thinking about St. Pete and sort of studying that race and what's going to happen this weekend in the IndyCar, it sort of got a bit more exciting.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say next. That I imagine once that disappointment disappears, you've got a whole new world that's going to open up for you on the weekend in St. Petersburg with your IndyCar debut. And the adrenaline of that, I imagine, takes over pretty quick.
Yeah, no, for sure. Look, studying the driver's notes and the onboard footage of the cars and stuff like that. And realising that the speeds that they're doing, they're doing the speeds that we're doing at Bathurst, on a street circuit, it's phenomenal. So, I'm excited for that, excited for the opportunity. I'm just going to go out there and just do every lap I can. I've got a heap to learn. To try and sort of soak everything up like a little sponge.
I know you've been in the car previously, but have you had a chance to get in the car since you've arrived?
Yeah, so what I've done, been in North Carolina the last few days, and that's where the simulator is. It's like a virtual sort of simulator, very accurate. I was able to sort of jump in there and spend a couple of days just, learning all the buttons again. It's a bit more high tech with, fuel codes and different maps for the engines to save fuel and, a few other things. Went into the workshop and I actually did a final seat fit because since I've been there, I've actually lost more weight. So it sort of had to just make sure that my seat was all tight and I was snug in the car. So and then the car's actually got put in the truck and they left this morning for Florida. So, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, but I've had plenty of prep with, the team and getting to know my guys. And, it's very cool over here because, my guys are actually like the three car. My car is number 3, and you've got your other cars number 1, number 12 and 22, and they've all got their own separate crews. So it's really cool. I've almost got my own sort of half a footy team. That are just working for me, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And it's something different to what I have in Australia for sure.
So I'm interested, Scott, with that. You've got your team. Now, you don't know them particularly well, unlike what you've got back here in Australia, where you know them, you trust them. How uncomfortable is that, that you are going in, and clearly they're there to work for you, but you don't quite know them as well as perhaps you'd like to?
Yeah, it's been hard. I mean, I asked the team to send me just basically the names with the faces next to them, basically, so I could just sort of half remember everyone's names, and that certainly helps. And I'd rather that, you know, roll over and say someone's name than roll up and say, oh, hey, legend, or what's going on, boss, or you know what I mean? So I think, one of those deals where you gain a lot of trust with your engineer, and that's probably the biggest relationship I've got to work on is, you know, I had such a good relationship with my engineers in Australia and working out the car and set up and all that stuff. They understood what I wanted. The same as I've got to do the exact same thing with my engineer over here. I've got to restart this weekend. So, you know, that's probably the biggest trust thing. And that comes, you know, trust from him on me and trust from me on him. But as far as the team is concerned, they know what we've been doing in Australia. So they have an idea of, you know, who I am as a person. They've watched the races and, you know, sort of thing like that. So you sort of walk in and yeah, everyone sort of almost knows you straight away. So it's been a pretty cool initiation. Everyone's been really nice. I've got a tremendous amount of trust on them. And I think it's even cooler, like I said, that you've got that team. Like, we'll go out for dinner this week and, you know, and really try and get acquainted as a team. And that's what I'm really excited for.
So, Scotty, I'm interested in the pressure that you're under or whether there is any pressure. Are you sort of like this young gun coming over from Australia and everyone knows who you are, or are you seen as a bit of a, and no disrespect, a bit of a nobody that no one knows much about, and you know, you don't necessarily get the respect you get that you get back here? Like, how would you sort of assess that situation?
No, I think I'm a wild card. That's what I think. I'm labeled as a wild card right now. I think I've got a bit of both. Like, not many people know who I am, but they sort of seen what I've done, and that's sort of what I'm feeling right now is the, you know, yeah, people know sort of what I got. I think I've got a little bit of promise, but at the same time, it's like, well, we don't really know what he's going to do, see what happens. So I'm happy being the unknown guy and just sort of coming in as a rookie. You know, I spoke to, you know, Roger and Tim Sindrick, who's the president of Penske and Penske Racing, and they were just like, you know, you just literally got to do every lap you can this weekend. Don't, you know, try and put a foot wrong. You don't have to be the fastest car out there. It's just a matter of learning and getting every lap and do every pit stop. And, you know, that's my ultimate goal this weekend. That's why I'm sort of, you know, the only person that can put more pressure on me is myself. So I think if I'm like that, I should be fine.
PGA Tour media manager, who's our man on the ground in the world of the PGA Tour. There's some news, obviously, that Adam Scott has tested positive for the coronavirus. Benny, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, guys, live from California, where, yeah, Adam Scott got the news this morning. It's a shame, but he's out of the Zozo Championship and, you know, going to self-quarantine for the next 2 weeks.
So just explain the situation for our listeners, that a player's tested before they get to the course, or were they tested before they're allowed to enter? How does it all work from the testing regime over there?
Yeah, we're in a bubble basically across the tour, and this includes myself, where when you get to the new venue, you must undergo a test. You wait out the 2 hours or so it takes for results to come through. If you get a good result, you're allowed on course and off you go for the week. And of course, the testing is there all week if you're not feeling so great or think there might be something a little off. And my understanding is that Adam was fine yesterday, but this morning was feeling a little bit dusty and decided to go for another test, and and he's got the positive result, and as such he's straight into lockdown.
Have you spoken to him?
Not directly, no. Obviously he's very disappointed and a little bit apprehensive and worried, I guess, as you could imagine. If this affects everybody differently, you never know how it's going to affect you. So, yeah, he's a little worried, but he's, you know, thinks everything will be okay. He's got to make sure he's now away from, obviously, his kids and his wife and whatnot for a week or so, though, as well, 2 weeks or so, which is a little frustrating for him. And we're only a few weeks off from the Masters as well. So things not going according to plan in his world, but I'm sure he'll be fine and bounce back from it.
Ben, we were talking earlier this morning when we heard the news, and it's sort of like, you know, Adam tried to completely stay away from America for as long as he could. He spent most of this year in Australia before going across for the majors and all that sort of thing. And so I would imagine it's kind of rocked him a little bit because he was felt a lot safer in Australia.
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty fair assumption to make. He has definitely been one of the most, if not the most, cautious player amongst this situation. So for it to happen to him is sort of definitely a little bit surprising. He's you know, taken all the right precautions, all the right measures, but it just shows that you can probably do all of that and still, you know, be at danger or whatever of contracting it. So, you know, there's still a chance that maybe it's a false positive or something along those lines. But as I said, he wasn't feeling his absolute best this morning. So it's likely that we won't see him, obviously, next couple of weeks on tour. And he may be back next. We'll see him. We'll probably be Augusta.
So, Ben, we've got Tony Finau, Dustin Johnson's another one that's tested positive, Adam Scott, three of the bigger names on tour. Is that unnerving at all for tour officials that it's sustainable moving forward, or are the percentages so low that it's just something that the PGA Tour have got to accept is going to happen and it's just they've got to push forward?
I think it's pushed forward at the moment because, as you said, comparatively to the numbers overall, while we've had, I think it's now 15 players test positive since the return, there's been no sort of contact spread for any of those at this stage. So it's not like progressed through the tour via the individual positive tests. As long as that's the case and the lockdown still works in that regard and there's no sort of super spreader situation, I think that things can go on how they're going. But yeah, look, it's the unnerving part, I guess, for the players is, you know, when they get the test each week waiting, and I can imagine that the pre-tournament tests for Masters Week will be one that people will be really anxious about.
It's Grand Final week, and I imagine it's very different for a media personality like you when you haven't got any functions, no cashies, Jono. There's a hit to the hip pockets. What's going on?
Oh, not for me, Harp. You know, not winning one, mate. Grand Final week. There's not too many functions out there, so that's okay. We can talk footy and we just, you know, obviously I love this time of year, and I know that. You know, even when I was playing, I'd still embrace Grand Final week. It's something that I've always loved as a kid. We used to have the parties when I was younger, you know, in Hoppers Crossing, and all the family and friends would come over, and it'd just be a massive build up all week for us in our household. So that's something that I've tried to obviously continue on with my kids and that sort of stuff. Just the love of Grand Final week and what it all means for everyone. Even if you're not involved, if your team's not involved in that particular week, you can still embrace it and appreciate what it is. So that's what we're doing again, although it's a little bit different this year, but we can't wait for Saturday night to come about. It's a new spectacle, something different, and absolutely, it's going to be a cracking game, isn't it? The two teams, it's a 50-50 split again, and it really could go either way. So it's going to be an absolute cracker, and the build-up, although we're not doing functions and those sort of things, it's still pretty cool. Still can't wait for it.
Yeah, it's still Grand Final week, and we've got Nathan Broad coming up later on, which we're looking forward to chatting to. And you're right, from a game perspective, purely from a tactic and strategy perspective, like there's not too many games you'd prefer to watch, I wouldn't think, for a season decider, because they're so contrasting, Jono. They're so different, these two teams, which makes this a very, very interesting affair.
Yeah, it does. And when you look at the Cats over the last couple of weeks, they've started to play on a little bit more. They can control the ball by foot and they can kick it around, especially out of their back half and have control in their game. But the last couple of weeks, they've just got it and gone. So it would be interesting to see if they continue that approach in the GF. And I hope they do, because it actually suits them as a footy club. It suits their team. It suits the way they want to move the ball with a bit of speed. It allows their forwards to get in some really good spots to compete well from about 60 out. So That movement is critical, and that's been a shift, because the last couple of years they've been controlled and they haven't made the grand final. This year they've been quicker with their play on, especially from marks, especially from probably half back, and that's allowed them to really dominate the opposition. So we'll wait and see whether Richmond allow them to do that. I think one of the 1%ers for the Tigers will be man the mark with intent and make sure you don't allow the Cats to move it quickly.
So, Jono, how much do we read into last time that they played? It's been a question I've asked a few people this week. Obviously, Richmond were dominant. Geelong went in as favourites that particular day, and because they'd been playing such great football, but had come off a short break, and Richmond just owned them, particularly for those first three quarters. Geelong couldn't score. Does that get factored in, or the fact that it's at a different ground and Geelong could have learnt so much from that, that it won't happen again? What's your feeling on that?
Yeah, look, they will look back at aspects of that. I think that's just the natural way of doing things, to see what went well and what didn't, particularly in Geelong's favour as well, talking about them at the moment. So, yeah, they'll have a look back, but I think they're playing different footy. And you're right, that period of the season was a period where you had sort of a lot of teams in the competition that were actually, you know, having a bad game here and there through about a 2 or 3 week period. And Geelong were just one of those. So I think that was the straighten up game for the Cats over the season. And we know how much they love playing at the Gabba this year. Their winning margin is huge. They're 5-0 there. So they walk in with a different mindset against the Tigers, playing them at the Gabba, no doubt.
Yeah, that's going to be a fascinating part of it. And we saw the way that Geelong broke down Brisbane and Collingwood with their foot skills. Time and space is not necessarily what they need, but they use the width so well, Jono. One thing that Jimmy's been on about for the last couple of weeks too is that they are moving the ball quickly. He's identified that, like you have. They're moving it quickly, but it's not necessarily goal to goal. Like, they're just keeping it in motion and using the width of the Gabba really well. And we spoke to Jed Buse yesterday, didn't we, Whitey, and spoke about the way that they've gone about it. And the width is something they've really embraced, because, as you well know, down at GMHBA Stadium, there's not a hell of a lot of it.
No, it's not. It's very tight, isn't it? And that's probably why they need to be a little bit more controlled with their ball movement. But Jed Buse is actually one that's been starting a lot of that off half-back and just getting it and going. He's had an unbelievable year, Jed Buse. He really has set them up well. His foot skills is the best I've seen him use it throughout his career consistently. So he's one of those ones that is really important for the Cats. It's nearly Bash Ahuli as well as he goes in grand finals. We know that over the last 3 or 4 years. But it really is the impact of Abuse versus a Bash Ahuli in some ways, and Tom Stewart coming off half back for the Cats, and who can have the biggest impact in that area versus Bash Ahuli and what he does for the Tigers has been significant. In terms of the ground, though, it really is interesting, because you look at what Richmond did choosing Metricon a couple of weeks ago, and whether Geelong sort of just have that in the back of their minds going, well, I'm not sure whether they really want to, you know, play at the Gabba. Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, you look at the little mind games, the little mind wins that you can have throughout this period leading into a game that we're calling 50-50 because of, it really is the unknown on who's going to take control of this contest. It probably will go right down to the wire, but just that little win maybe for the Cats, going 5-0 now at the Gabba, beating Brisbane the way that they did on their home deck, it just sort of flows in their favour a little bit, I think, in terms of what Richmond decide to do in that second final.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think that's why it's interesting, because Geelong have got that 5-0 record at the Gabba, but then Richmond have got the record of beating Geelong 5 of the last 6 times. So that might or might not counterbalance things out a bit, because clearly Geelong have got a real love of playing at the Gabba, and for Richmond to really push for that final to be played at Metricon makes me think that they're not as comfortable at the Gabba, even though they've got a good record at the Gabba because they'd beaten Brisbane all those years. I just found that was interesting that they had pushed to play that final at Metricon Stadium.
Well, that's been their training base, I suppose. So they've probably thought that they've done all their training there. So yeah. Why not? You know, we should push to have that final there, and that's a fair enough decision as well when we look at it closely, but. Oh, look, boys, I don't know whether that patch of turf from the MCG has landed on the Gabba yet, but that's probably the one thing that the Tigers are relying on, the fact there's a bit of the MCG that's made its way to the Gabba. I know we had a good laugh about it last week. I don't know whether they've put it in or not.
It's still in the fridge. It's still in the fridge.
The curators aren't putting that down, so I don't know. Maybe, you know, they're, we have a little bit of a laugh with that, but... Yeah, ultimately, I still think it's just in Geelong's favour this weekend's game.
So I'm going to ask to both of you this question. Obviously, Huff, we'll have another look at it tomorrow. But just with Dustin Martin and what to do with him, because it is interesting that most clubs just let Dustin do what Dustin does. It's almost like they don't seem to have an answer as to how to handle him. What does Geelong do? Do they just let him do what he's always done, or do they have to have a specific plan to try and counter him? Because the reality is, in finals, Dustin Martin goes to new levels. That's just what happens.
Yeah, that's it. I think if he plays up forward, they have got the type of player physically that can match Dustin, but it's just trying to stop him. It's very difficult to do. And you look at the midfield and you go, okay, well, if Richmond's midfield are going quite strong, then Dusty can spend a little bit more time forward. And it's the same with Geelong with Danger. And that's what we're looking at here, those comparisons with Danger as well, because the last couple of weeks, Geelong's mids have gone really, really well. Duncan, Parfitt, Guthrie, they've really dominated the midfield for the Cats. So therefore, Danger can spend time forward because he doesn't have to go in there to control the game in the midfield. And it's the same with Richmond. Yes, Dusty will jump in there to find a bit of ball if he's not getting it forward. But ultimately, for those two players to have the impact forward of centre, which could determine the game, it comes down to the other collective within the midfields to see who can get on top. And if it is Geelong, Danger spends time forward, and then it makes the back six for Richmond so much more accountable. All of a sudden, Grimes might have to go, or Broad might have to go to Danger. You've got Bolter on Hawk, and someone's got to stop Gary Rowan, who can play in the air on the ground. Then you've got the smalls flowing. So all of a sudden, their structure of trying to get off to support in the air or back first is changed, because Danger and Gary Rowan and Hawkins, they'll make you come with them. That you can't zone off that type of player with the way they position and the way they lead up with strength to draw their opponent with them. So that's critical as well, I think, in terms of the setup for them. I think Geelong would love Danger to spend more time forward this week just to engage the back six of the Tigers and make them more accountable and maybe play a little bit differently to what they're used to.
Obviously, when you can get a free agent in the door, it's great for the footy club. It shows that we're now a club that, you know, is attracting some free agents, and you know, now we just look forward to getting him in and you know, working with him for the next 4 or 5 years. Well, I think if you saw our final against Richmond, we kind of got belted up in the midfield. So to be able to get a bloke who is, you know, a big-bodied midfielder that can do a bit of everything, it's only going to help us get better. And you know, he's a BNF winner in Adelaide. He's played in the grand final, so he knows what it's like to play in big games as well.
That's the voice of Jared Ruffhead these days, working for St Kilda. Ooh, hard to say that. Talking about Brad Crouch, who has chosen the Saints as his destination there. He would like to be playing for in the next 5 years, they tell me the deal looks like, at the Saints, which is interesting in itself. Let's get to Glenn McFarlane from the Herald Sun. He knows more about this stuff than I do. That was on Fox Footy last night, AFL 360. Macca, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Harp and Whitey. How are you travelling, boys?
Going very well, thank you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Now, it's a free agent situation, as Jared Ruffhead was talking about there. What's the level of compensation coming back the Crows' way, do you think, on the back of a 5-year deal, if in fact it goes that way, if Adelaide don't match?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the feeling is at the moment that Adelaide will match, and that's going to be a situation. We know with these free agency compensation deals that there's a little bit of herbs and spices that the AFL put in. I'm not sure Russell Crowe sometimes in a beautiful mind would really understand some of the deals that the AFL actually do. So based on the new contract that the free agent has been offered by that club, but also the age of the free agent. And at 26, Brad Crouch is in the prime of his career. So the Crows want maximum compensation, and that means we could be heading to a game of brinksmanship. It might actually be a trade that has to be done rather than that situation. Initially, we thought that the Brad Crouch deal might be around the $700,000, which might give the Crows compensation picks straight after their first pick in the draft.
Yep.
As we understand it now, he's going to get a little bit less than that. So that means that it may be that it's an end of first round pick for the Adelaide Crows. And I don't think they'd be happy with that. So I think there's every chance that they could match that situation with the Saints, which means we might have to have a trade between the two clubs.
Is there provision, Macca? Now, I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but I want to ask it. Is there provision in that secret herbs and spices beautiful mind recipe that the status of the team losing the player comes into calculation? Like Adelaide have clearly a long way off being a contending team and need a lot of help, it's seemingly at the moment, with their playing stocks, that the AFL would say, well, it's part of the recipe which we never actually show you anyway. We think it's worthwhile, that deal, and we think it is a straight after your first pick situation, so they end up with pick 2 or 3, whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's actually written into the into the free agency compensation, the one that we can never see, the explanation for it as well. It is actually decided upon by an expert panel who then report back to the footy general manager operations, which is Stephen Hocking. I'm sure that the clubs that are struggling get a better hearing in regard to that. I still think there's every chance that they won't get that pick two, as it would be before we get into the situation with the draft. So I think it comes to a situation that there will have to be probably a trade in this sense.
And this is the frustration with it all, I reckon, for footy fans as well, is that there is no transparency as such around what the pick is, but also the inconsistency that if Brad Crouch is lost as a free agent, Adelaide gets pick two, but then if Adelaide was seventh or eighth, then it would be pick 10 or pick 11. I mean, shouldn't it just be straight down the line? He's worth pick 10, so he's pick 10, not based on where they finish on the ladder. I don't know.
Yeah,
it'd be good to have some sort of consistency attached to it.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. It's a dog's breakfast, the free agency compensation situation. The clubs are frustrated by it as well. And we're going to see a similar situation with Jeremy Cameron and Geelong. There's no doubt that the Giants will absolutely match that offer from Geelong, which means, again, the game of brinksmanship starts, which is good for us in the media and getting through, trade work. Either one of these deals could push all the other trades back in that last week. So it's going to be fascinating to see what actually happens. But wouldn't it be nice if they just come out with the secret herbs and spices, guys? But then again, the Colonel didn't do it, so why would the AFL?
No, exactly right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, and Essendon's in a similar position as well with Joe Danaher. They still don't know whether they would get a first-round compensation pick at the end of the first round or after their first pick. And the other issue, not just with Essendon, with other clubs as well, is that if you bring in a free agent, you don't then get the compensation for losing a free agent. So you then have to trade players in as opposed to get free agents in. So there's a lot of... That's why a lot of the time it takes a long time to get these things done, because there has to be an order of events to avoid potentially losing the compensation you think you're going to get. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, it balances out.
Well,
it's income and expenditure, like an accounting ledger. And what comes in and what's worth and what goes out and what that's worth, and then the difference is what you end up with. I must admit, I disagree with the compensation formula that you were talking about, that consistent one you're after, because I think a good player to a poor team is worth much more than a good player in a good team in terms of the overall output of that player. So I think they should be compensated as such if there is going to be a compensation system.
That's fair, but at the same point, I have a philosophical issue that Lance Franklin would go to Sydney for pick 18 or 19 in the draft compared to, and even in a Jeremy Cameron situation, he's worth more than what Brad Crouch is worth. He's worth two first-round picks. Brad Crouch isn't.
Yeah, but you can make that call and trade for that. That's your call.
Yeah,
but from a free agency perspective, Buddy was he's a champion player and all-time great, but Hawthorn were a champion team, so his loss isn't going to be felt as much as it was if it was
the team at the bottom
of the ladder at the time. So I'm okay with the formula as it sits.
No, you've argued that well. I've almost changed my mind.
So Brad Crouch looks like he's going to the Saints on a five-year deal, which is quite long these days, Macca, and considering the current state of the football economy, that's interesting. But he's not the only crow on the move, it seems.
No, exactly. Well, there's quite a few crows who could be on the move, but Kyle Hartigan going to Hawthorn has expressed an interest in, well, more than expressed an interest. He's nominated Hawthorn as the club that he would like to go to. What I found fascinating about the Crows media release yesterday announcing this was that the Crows media release wished Kyle and his family all the best for the future and the like. Brad Crouch didn't get that same message, so I know that Kyle's returning to Victoria in that sense, but there was no wishing your family all the best to Brad in that situation. So I thought that was quite interesting. But the Hawks have been the sleeper so far in a lot of these discussions, haven't they? But they need a backman to sort of help out their stocks there. So Hartigan will go there. So the Crows are making a few changes and a few teams actually trying to raid the Crows, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. They really can't afford unless they're getting something on the way back through. And you mentioned, we spoke about Brad Crouch, of course, which will have some effect, you think, on the Saints' chase for Jai Caldwell from the Giants, whether or not he can get there now that they've got Crouch seemingly in their sights?
Yeah, absolutely. That could be a big change there. And we did say that in the Herald Sun on Tuesday, that once Jeremy Cameron selected Geelong, it meant that Brad Crouch was more than likely to be elsewhere, and certainly St Kilda. But Jai Caldwell was very keen on St Kilda, and there are a couple of clubs who have been certainly keen on Jai. The two clubs most interested were St Kilda and Essendon. But given the fact that Crouch has now chosen St Kilda, I just think from an opportunity perspective that the Bombers now loom large for Caldwell. So I think that makes a lot of sense. If he gets to the Bombers, we keep hearing players losing, you know, the Bombers losing players. It'd be good to see them get some come back in the other way.
Let's touch base now with James Sutherland, CEO of Golf Australia. We learned last week that the Australian PGA Championship, the Australian Open and the Women's Australian Open would be cancelled for this summer of golf. And unfortunately, there's been another casualty and the CEO joins us. James, good morning.
Morning. Morning, Jen.
Great to have you with us. Not fantastic news for golfers. What can you tell us today from a Golf Australia perspective?
Obviously very disappointing. We had the announcement last week with those major national championships, the men's and the women's and the PGA, and this week just haven't been able to work through in such a way so that we've had to cancel the Victorian Open as well, which has been a fantastically successful event down on the Bellarine Peninsula over the last few years, the men's and women's event together, which is a bit of a first in the world. But we just feel that it's just too difficult with all of the challenges, including getting the best talent in the field, which is obviously a real predicament at the moment in the way that people are limited from moving around.
So we spoke last week about the big three not going ahead, and we sort of understood that the timing was going to be really difficult. The fact that it's in February, does it make it harder to pull the pin earlier? This early now, James, considering what might open up, or are you feeling and hearing that there's not going to be a lot of change to the way that we're moving around the world for the next 6 months?
I think travel is going to continue to be an issue, and the feedback we've had talking to the professional players and their representatives is that they're going to think very carefully about how they move themselves around the world. And if they've got to come somewhere and quarantine for 2 weeks, which I think that's going to be a matter of course for quite some time yet, then they need to make it worth their while, and they need to sort of come for a long period, not just come out for one tournament or a couple of tournaments, because they're going to have to, when they go home, they're going to have to quarantine again. So, you know, that's a month out of their life, and probably a month without earning as well.
Yeah, and that makes a bit of sense. So on the back of that, was there discussion of making it an Australian-only event? Now, I don't know, that part of the lure and the attraction of the whole concept is to get European Tour status and LPGA status for the women's perspective, and you wouldn't get that with a domestic tournament effectively, but it is the Vic Open. Was it discussed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we thought very carefully about having an event that didn't necessarily attract the international players, and how that might be co-joined with other events that may be playing around the country. And so then we need to project forward and say, okay, what's happening with travel borders, border restrictions and movement in other parts of the country. And that, it doesn't seem as though that's going away domestically. There's still going to be quarantining provisions in and out of states. But then I think the other thing on top of that is the challenges with social distancing and crowds and biosecurity hubs and all of those sorts of things. For golf, when people are moving around, it's actually a little bit more challenging for golf than it is even in a stadium environment. And also the additional cost burden on that is really significant, and something for events and a sport like golf that doesn't get the same sort of media rights, say, as an AFL or an NRL or a cricket, it's a different challenge altogether, and the economics just don't stack up.
You've picked a good time, James, to get back into top-level sport as a CEO.
Yeah, I think, it doesn't matter what sport you're in, the challenges are unforeseen. These sorts of issues that everyone's dealing with weren't, I don't think they were on anyone's risk chart in terms of predicted events that might happen. So it is certainly unusual and very challenging for everyone.
Imagine playing 69 games of AFL football, having two premierships, and the 70th could be premiership number three. That's the situation that faces Nathan Broad from the Tigers, who's getting ready for the grand final, of course, on Saturday night against the Cats. He's been good enough to join us. Nathan, good morning.
Good morning.
When I say those things out loud, it actually sounds ridiculous what's happened to you in your football careers to this point in time. Now, I know you're living it, and you probably don't get a chance to think about it, but when you hear it, how does it make you feel that this is possibly premiership number three within 70 games of footy?
Yeah, a bit like you said, it's pretty ridiculous in my mind too. For a bloke who played, more Reggie's games than league games in the Waffle, just to get drafted was good enough for me. And then the debut, I was pretty wrapped and content at that stage. But, to be playing in my third granny, it's been an amazing journey, one that I'm very grateful for, that's for sure.
I think you've only lost 14 games. So what happens with you when the Tigers play is you win, which is a pretty good thing to be happening when you're playing. So this time around, Nathan, you've done it twice before and going for that third one, as we said. This time around, are you more comfortable with it all, or is because of the situation with the whole hub life that it doesn't actually feel normal?
It still feels like a granny. Probably at the start of isolation, everyone was thinking, would this grand final be as worthy as the rest of them? But after living the hub life and getting through 17 games, whatever it was, it's definitely more as real as all the other grannies. Obviously, a little bit more different, though. We have no parade and can't really do a hell of a lot up here. But the game itself, it feels just as real as the other two, that's for sure.
I asked Jed Buse this yesterday about how nervous he was. He hasn't played in a grand final before, but he's certainly played in a lot of final series. For you, that this is going to be a third in 4 years, how do you feel? Do you feel nervous because it is a grand final? Or as you said, because it's up there, it's all a bit different and it just feels like another game?
I don't get nervous a hell of a lot. I think the environment that the club creates and the way we speak about it and go about it, it makes folks very, very calm and makes the whole week just embrace it for what it is and don't try and rush the game upon us. Just enjoy the week for what it is. So, I think the way the club puts us in that position, we're very calm about it. So it is obviously just another game, but one that has a bit more meaning to it. But, the nerve won't be as high as I expect.
I know it's a hard question to answer, but do you feel you're going as well as you were in other premiership years? Now you've got to the grand final. You had your challenges last year. You had your challenges this year. But as you go into a grand final, are the confidence levels as high as they have been previous years?
We're definitely feeling confident. We're coming up against a very good opposition in Geelong who have been outstanding all year, and they've obviously got a lot of blokes that have been there before and played in grannies and all that stuff. So it's not going to be easy, obviously, but I guess one good thing is they're winning clearances at the moment. So our midfield coach will be wrapped about that. We haven't won them for about 3 years. So that's a bonus. It
takes the ball out of your territory too when they're winning clearances. It goes the other way.
Exactly right. It makes it easy for us.
What about going the long way around this time after the loss to Brisbane in the qualifying final, having to do it the hard way? What's that added or how has that changed the dynamic from the team in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I guess we speak about a lot as being planted or being buried. We just saw it as an opportunity to be planted and a growth opportunity and a challenge which we're always up for. So, like you said, it was a different way and we didn't have the week off. But, we really relished the opportunity to go over to Adelaide. And, we never like to lose to a team two times in a row, so it was a good opportunity to get in a hostile environment and get together and, try and get the win, which we did, which was nice.
For Geelong this week, and speaking of not losing to the teams two times in a row, you don't lose too often to Geelong, particularly in your time in footy. Five of the last six, you've beaten Geelong. What is it about the way you play that seemingly has an upper hand against the Cats?
Poor. I don't know if we've got an upper hand against them. I think we just get... we just stick to our way and I guess you hear about it spoken a lot in the AFL these days, the process. We find that our game plan can hold up. It's not like we've got an edge over them, I don't think, or something that we can nail down to beating them. But I think the game plan, the way we play, the system we play, is good enough for finals, and it's built for finals footy, so hopefully it can stack up come this Saturday.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.